Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, September 22nd, 2020. We will begin on the front page with an article entitled, Apartment Building Gets Okay Again. Council reapproves final plat for West Locust Apartments. This is regarding the Normal Council. Plans for a five-story, student-oriented apartment building on West Locust Street continue to move forward after a Normal Town Council vote on Monday. The council voted 7-0 to approve the final plat for the project, which will replace three older buildings at 105, 107, and 111 West Locust Street. The Iden family, which owns the existing buildings, plans to redevelop the properties into one building with a circle drive in front to facilitate ride hailing and delivery services. Council members had approved the subdivision's final plat on May 4th under conditions of the developer paying certain fees, filing various certificates, and posting a bond related to the sewer relocation, according to town staff. While other requirements were met, the developer did not post a bond within the 90 days following council approval, town staff said. Council was required to reapprove the final plat after the developer sent a letter of credit. The option on whether or not to post a bond or letter of credit is typically left up to the developer, said Normal Town Engineer Ryan Otto. The letter of credit is typically cash posted with a banking institution, and the surety can be from an insurance company or another type of vendor that sells those types of bonds. In other business, council authorized 7-0 an intergovernmental agreement to provide continued fire protection and emergency medical services to Illinois State University. Illinois State University will reimburse the town $604,956 for fire and emergency services, which is $12,153 more than the 2019-20 fiscal year agreement, said the town staff. The service agreement is modified each year to reflect a new reimbursement rate for fire and emergency services, according to the staff. The reimbursement rate is determined by the Illinois Municipal League, which is used throughout the state and in other university communities. The Illinois Municipal League updated the fire protection reimbursement formula, which indicates a 2.05% increase over the 2019 rate. The rate is effective from July 1st to June 30th, 2021. The Bloomington Council also had a meeting, and its front page article is entitled Murals, Sidewalk Art, Possibilities Considered. This is by Annalisa Trofimuk. City leaders could decide as early as next week about whether they will allow murals and other work by local artists to be displayed on public rights of way. During the Bloomington City Council's Committee of the Whole meeting Monday night, members discussed how city sidewalks could feature local artists' work. Nora Dukowitz, spokesman for the city, previously said the city does not have specific sidewalks or other public rights of way in mind. City Manager Tim Gleason said this topic has been discussed for years and officials plan to work something out for earlier this year, but the pandemic prevented that from happening. Formal action was not taken Monday, as Committee of the Whole meetings are meant to be working sessions that do not include votes. Deputy City Manager Billy Tyus said the goal would be to support Bloomington artists and programs. One of the things we have talked about is how do we come up with a process that is fair, that is non-bureaucratic, Tyus said. He added that the city could create a committee that would create requests for proposals based on a specific set of criteria. Tyus said staff is recommending that the committees be made up of members from local organizations and Bloomington residents. In the event that city takes on a program like this, there is an opportunity for us to fund it, said Tyus. I think there are a number of opportunities for doing that if you want to. He said the city could raise money and collect donations to fund the work. Another option would be to create a percent for art fee, which would call for the city to set aside a portion of the budget for construction projects to fund public art. Cities across the country, including Los Angeles, Dallas, and Philadelphia, have adopted similar programs in recent decades. Tyus said municipalities with such programs often set aside 1% to 1.5% in construction budgets for art. While we love our streets and sewers, the building of that is not always pretty, he said. Ward 6 Alderwoman Jen Carrillo said she would like to see a rotating membership on the committee. That is a way to involve community and help build pride in their neighborhoods, Carrillo said. Ward 1 Alderman Jamie Mathey thanked Tyus for his work on the project. There is not really anything we can identify on the east side or west side art, and art is pretty much all in the core, Mathey said. I think this is a great program, and I appreciate you bringing this forward, and I will support it. Ward 9 Alderwoman Kim Bray said she wants the city to take this opportunity to identify, quote, who we are as a city, unquote. I would prefer to see us thinking about finding our commonalities, Bray said. The Pantograph on Monday submitted a Freedom of Information Act request for a complete version of the proposed framework. The council will meet next on Monday, September 28th at 6 p.m. over Zoom. The meetings are streamed live on the city's YouTube page. In local and state news, we have reporting on the COVID situation. Tazewell County reports 6 deaths. McLean County sees 15 new cases, lowest total since August 18th. This is by Kevin Barlow. While McLean County reported 15 new cases of COVID-19 on Monday, Tazewell County reported 6 additional deaths related to the novel virus. Officials said 4 of the deaths came from a long-term care facility experiencing an outbreak. Ford County also announced an additional death on Monday. In McLean County, the total number of cases since March is at 3,163, but the 15 new cases marks the lowest number of new cases in the health department's daily report since August 18th, when 3 cases were confirmed. McLean County Health Administrator Jessica McKnight said 584 patients were recovering at home, while 7 remained hospitalized, including 2 in intensive care. The rolling 7-day positivity rate is 4.1% through Sunday. There have been 19 COVID-19-related deaths in McLean County. There were 301 people tested at the community-based testing center located on the McLean County Fairgrounds on Bloomington's west side on Sunday. The site is operated by Roditis Laboratories and can accommodate vehicles and walk-ups from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily. The site has an online registration process to help the system move faster and to allow people to check results online within a few days. Each person being tested needs to register under a separate email account. If you encounter problems or are unable to register online, the staff at the testing site can help. Individuals do not need to have symptoms or live in McLean County to use this site, and there is no charge to be tested. In Logan County, 9 new cases were announced, including a teenager who is asymptomatic and who is isolating at home, a toddler who is showing symptoms and is isolating at home, and a 6-year-old who is asymptomatic and is isolating at home. In Tazewell County, 2 women in their 90s and 2 men in their 90s from a long-term care facility died over the weekend. The other deaths reported Monday included a woman in her 80s who was not affiliated with a long-term care facility and a man in his 90s who was affiliated with a different facility, officials said. There have now been 23 deaths associated to the COVID-19 breakout in Tazewell County. 11 people remain hospitalized. There have been 1,579 confirmed cases in Tazewell County, including 30 new cases reported on Saturday, 18 more on Sunday, and 21 new cases confirmed on Monday. In Ford County, there have now been 5 deaths, and the latest was announced Monday, who was a man in his 60s. Ford County has a total of 141 cases. Of those, 92 are confirmed cases and 49 are probable cases. Officials say 124 of the previously reported cases have been released from isolation. 12 cases remain active with 0 hospitalizations. Livingston County reported 35 new cases. The newly confirmed cases include a boy under the age of 1, a boy under the age of 10. The Illinois Department of Corrections is also reporting 20 new confirmed cases at Pontiac Correctional Center. In Livingston County, 357 confirmed COVID-19 cases tests have been confirmed positive, while 68 cases remain active, 3 are currently hospitalized, and 5 have resulted in death due to complications related to COVID-19. In LaSalle County, 5 new cases were confirmed, including 2 women in their 20s. There have been 1,619 confirmed cases in LaSalle County as of Monday. Also, 1,029 have recovered. The Illinois Department of Public Health reported 1,477 new cases on Monday and 7 additional deaths. A Macon County woman in her 80s was among those deaths reported. The preliminary 7-day statewide positivity for cases as a percent of total tests from September 14th to September 20th is 3.5%. We'll continue with coronavirus information. This is entitled U.S. Near 200,000 Deaths. Situation deteriorating in Europe as countries again restrict activity. Now, this is by the Associated Press. As the U.S. closed in on 200,000 coronavirus deaths Monday, the crisis deteriorated across Europe, with Britain working to draw up new restrictions, Spain clamping down again in Madrid, and the Czech Republic replacing its health minister with an epidemiologist because of a surge of infections. The push to reimpose tough measures in Europe to beat back a scourge that had seemingly been brought under control in the spring contributed to a drop on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrial Average shed nearly 510 points, or 1.8%, and the S&P 500 fell 1.2%. In Britain, Prime Minister Boris Johnson was expected to announce a round of restrictions Tuesday to slow the spread of the disease. British Chief Medical Officer Chris Whitty warned that cases are doubling every 7 days and could lead to a rise in deaths in the coming weeks. Meanwhile, the top U.S. public health agency stirred confusion by posting and then taking down an apparent change in its position on how easily the coronavirus can spread on small droplets in the air. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has said that the virus spreads primarily through small airborne droplets, like those that fly through the air when someone coughs or sneezes. Most CDC guidance about social distancing is built around that idea. In interviews, CDC officials have also acknowledged growing evidence that the virus can sometimes spread on even smaller aerosolized particles or droplets that spread over a wider area. That's one reason public health experts urge people to wear masks, which can stop or reduce contact with both larger droplets and aerosolized particles. For months, the agency's website said little about aerosolized particles. So when the CDC quietly posted an update Friday that discussed the particles in more detail, the agency's position appeared to have changed. The post said the virus can remain suspended in the air and drift more than 6 feet, and officials emphasized the importance of indoor ventilation. The Post also added singing and breathing to the ways the virus can go airborne. On Monday, federal health officials said the post was a mistake and that it had been released before full editing and clearance was completed. They said the CDC plans to clarify the agency's thinking, but the agency did not immediately release a statement or revision. In a statement released Monday, the agency said the revisions to the, quote, How COVID-19 Spreads, close quote, page, happen without appropriate in-house technical review. In state political news, we have Illinois GOP lawmaker apologizes for comments. Recorded remarks disparage opponent. This is by Raymond Trinosco. Freshman State Representative Amy Grant, a Republican from Wheaton, apologized Monday after making disparaging comments in a recorded phone call about her opponent, Ken Meha Beal, which referenced his race and sexual orientation. In a Monday morning virtual news conference, Democratic State Representatives Will Davis of Hazelcrest, Greg Harris of Chicago, and Emmanuel Chris Welch of Hillside presented three short recordings of Grant from a single phone call, although they said they would not release the full call. In the call, Grant said Meha Beal, who is a gay black Democrat from Lyle, is afraid to travel to the heart of her district, not because he's black, but because of the way he talks. He's all LGBTQ. In another clip, Grant says Meha Beal is just another one of Cook County people, another black caucus. The three lawmakers called on Grant to offer a, quote, sincere apology, close quote, to Beal, and the freshman Republican lawmaker issued an apology in an email release shortly before the news conference began. She also apologized in a voicemail to Meha Beal. I deeply regret the comments I made about Ken and reached out to apologize to him this morning. These comments do not reflect my heart or my faith, Grant wrote in a short statement. The conversation was between Grant and an unnamed party. The details about who initiated the call are in dispute. Later Monday, Meha Beal issued a statement criticizing Grant's apology and calling her comments hurtful, degrading, and wholly unacceptable. I am running because I know we are a stronger, better community than the one Representative Grant depicts in her hurtful words and extreme agenda. And the people I talk to in every part of our district know that too, he said in a written statement. The Democratic lawmakers said Grant had originally called the individual as part of her fundraising efforts and that was the subject of their call. The individual returned Grant's call and informed her the call was being recorded, according to the Democrats. A spokesman for the State House Republican leader, Jim Durkin, Republican from Western Springs, disputed this story, however. In an email Monday, the spokesperson said Grant did not agree to be recorded and the individual had actually initiated contact with Grant and identified themselves as a potential donor and supporter of Republican U.S. House candidate Jeannie Ives, who previously held Grant's seat. Turning now to national news, we have from the front page, Trump sets timeline for court selection. Ginsburg to Lyon State at U.S. Capitol. This is by Lisa Mascaro, Jonathan Lemire, and Alexandra Jaffe with the Associated Press. President Donald Trump said Monday he expects to announce his pick to fill the vacancy on the Supreme Court by week's end before the burial of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the court's liberal icon at Arlington National Cemetery. Trump met Monday with Judge Amy Coney Barrett at the White House as the conservative jurist emerged as a favorite to replace Ginsburg on the court, the start of a monumental Senate confirmation fight over objections from Democrats. It's too close to the November election. The president told reporters he was still going to be interviewing other candidates and might meet with Judge Barbara Lagoa when he travels to Florida later this week. But Barrett has long been favored by conservatives and those familiar with the process, said interest inside the White House seemed to be waning for Lagoa amid concerns by some that she did not have a proven record as a conservative jurist. Democrats, led by presidential nominee Joe Biden, are protesting the Republicans' rush to replace Ginsburg, saying voters should speak first on Election Day, November 3rd, and the winner of the White House should fill the vacancy. Trump dismissed those arguments, telling Fox and Friends, "I think that would be good for the Republican Party, and I think it would be good for everyone to get it over with." The mounting clash over the vacant seat, when to fill it and with whom, injects new turbulence in the presidential campaign, with the nation still reeling from the coronavirus pandemic that has killed nearly 200,000 Americans, left millions unemployed, and heightened partisan tensions and anger. Up until now, the race has been largely a referendum on how Trump has managed or mismanaged the COVID-19 pandemic. Democrats point to hypocrisy and Republicans trying to rush through a pick so close to the election after Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell led the GOP in refusing to vote on a nominee of President Barack Obama in February 2016, long before that year's election. Biden is appealing to GOP senators to, quote, uphold your constitutional duty, your conscience, and wait until after the election. Ginsburg, 87, died Friday of metastatic pancreatic cancer. She will lie in state at the U.S. Capitol this week, the first woman ever accorded that honor. First, her casket is to be on view midweek on the steps of the High Court. She is to be buried next week in a private service at Arlington National Cemetery. Conversations in the White House and McConnell's office have been increasingly focused on Barrett and Lagoa, according to a person granted anonymity to discuss the private deliberations. An appellate court judge, Barrett was a strong contender for the seat that eventually went to Brett Kavanaugh in 2018. At the time, Trump told confidants he was saving Barrett for Ginsburg's seat. Lagoa has been pushed by some aides who tout her political advantages of being Hispanic and hailing from the key political battleground state of Florida. Trump said he is planning to name his pick by Friday or Saturday, ahead of the first presidential election debate. With just over a month before the election, McConnell said the Senate has, quote, more than sufficient time. No nominee has won confirmation so quickly since Sandra Day O'Connor, with no opposition from either party, became the first woman to serve on the Supreme Court in 1981. Both sides are mobilizing for a wrenching confirmation fight, punctuated by crucial issues before the court: health care, abortion access, and even the potential outcome of the coming presidential election. Some protesters showed up early Monday morning outside the homes of key GOP senators. Trump has said he would choose a woman, and he admitted that politics may play a role. He gave another election battleground state, Michigan, and He gave a nod to another election battleground state, Michigan, and White House officials confirmed he was referring to Joan Larson, a federal appeals court judge there. As the Senate returned to Washington on Monday, several key GOP senators, including Mitt Romney of Utah, declined to say whether they would agree for a swift vote. Four Republicans could halt a quick confirmation, and Trump criticized Republican Senators Susan Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska for opposing a vote before the election. The president warned they would, quote, be badly hurt by voters. Others, including GOP Senators Chuck Grassley of Iowa and Cory Gardner of Colorado, declined to join in opposing the president's plan. Trump went so far as to disparage reports that Ginsburg had told her granddaughter it was her wish that a replacement justice not be confirmed until the inauguration of a new president. With no evidence, it just sounds to me like he suggested the wish came from his political foes, including Representative Adam Schiff, the House Intelligence Committee chairman. Schiff said Trump has sunk to a new low with that comment. He said he had nothing to do with Ginsburg's dying wish, but would fight like hell to make it come true. A day earlier, Biden appealed to Republicans to join Murkowski and Collins in opposing a confirmation vote before the November 3rd election. On Monday, Biden focused on joblessness and the pandemic rather than the court vacancy as he campaigned in Wisconsin, aligning himself with the country's workers, especially those who voted for Trump in 2016 after having backed Obama and himself just 4 years earlier. Staying on the subject of the Supreme Court, we have Illinois-based frontrunner hailed by Wright. Barrett established herself as a reliable conservative. This is by Michael Tarm and Michael Biesecker of the Associated Press. A frontrunner to fill the Supreme Court seat vacated by the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a federal appellate judge in Illinois who has established herself as a reliable conservative on hot-button legal issues from abortion to gun control. Amy Coney Barrett, a devout Catholic, is hailed by religious conservatives and others on the right as an ideological heir to conservative icon Antonin Scalia, the late Supreme Court justice for whom she clerked. Liberals say Barrett's legal views are too heavily influenced by her religious beliefs and fear her ascent to the nation's highest court could lead to a scaling back of hard-fought abortion rights. She would also replace the justice who is best known for fighting for women's rights and equality. President Donald Trump has said he'll nominate a woman, and Barrett is thought to be at the top of his list of favorites. The Chicago-based 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals judge was considered a finalist in 2018 for Trump's second nomination to the high court, which eventually went to Brett Kavanaugh after Justice Anthony Kennedy retired. Barrett's selection now could help Trump energize his base just weeks before Election Day. At just 48, Barrett would be the youngest justice, and her tenure could last for decades. She's made her mark in law primarily as an academic at the University of Notre Dame, where she began teaching at age 30. She first donned judge's robes in 2017 after Trump nominated her to the Seventh Circuit. But she wouldn't be the only justice with little prior experience as a judge. John Roberts and Clarence Thomas spent less time as appellate judges before their Supreme Court nominations, and Elena Kagan had never been a judge before President Barack Obama nominated her in 2009. Barrett mentioned Kagan when asked in a White House questionnaire in 2017 about which justices she admired most, saying Kagan brought to the bench the knowledge and skills she acquired as an academic to the practical resolution of disputes. When Barrett's name first arose in 2018 as a possible Trump pick, even some conservatives worried her sparse judicial record made it too hard to predict how she might rule. Nearly 3 years on, her judicial record now includes the authorship of around 100 opinions and several telling dissents in which Barrett displayed her clear and consistent conservative bent. And with that, we'll conclude the first part of today's reading of the Pantograph for Tuesday, September 22nd, 2020. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with the second half of today's paper.